Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since Waves. And you listen to Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to Sandra from SCT Therapy, which uses hypnotherapy, eye movement therapy, NLP, EFT, and coaching and counseling to treat a wide range of symptoms, difficulties, and problems. Welcome to the show, Sandra. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Gavin. Yes, really good. Thanks.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you for coming on the show. Much appreciated.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's all right. Tell us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today. I think our listeners would find that quite interesting.
Yeah. So it is quite different. So I was almost 30 years a civil servant, worked in Department for Work and Pensions mostly, as a project manager. And then in 2006, me and my husband adopted our first son, which was just a wonderful experience. My son came home at 4.5 months old, so he was baby, and everything was great, really, really good. And for the first 8 years, everything went really well. We adopted his half brother, and he came home when he was just over one. So we've got two adopted children, now age 16 and 11. And at age 8, my eldest son had what I can only really describe as a bit of a breakdown. And we recognised that he had early life trauma. So things kind of changed overnight for us. And having spent all of my life, and quite literally 40 odd years, never really thinking about mental health, never really worrying about it. I never had to. We had to change overnight, and we had to learn quite quickly about the effects of trauma and attachment. And at the time, it was a really difficult few years for us, trying to understand how best to help our sons. And in the process of that, I had to give up my work as a civil servant, which was a really scary time. It was all I'd known, really. I'd kind of started as a civil servant at about age 21. So it was a long time. But I had to give up the job because it was it wasn't going to be flexible enough to be able to help my sons, really, with their situation. And then I experienced some secondary trauma as a direct result of Cameron's difficulties. And because of that, I had some EMDR therapy by a really good EMDR practitioner, which basically was my lifeline, really. I know that sounds a bit dramatic, but it was quite literally my lifeline. And because of that, I became very interested in helping other people as well. I had a friend who was kind of suffering quite badly at the time from anxiety and stress, and I wanted to help her, but I wanted to know how to do that. So I decided to train. I was kind of given advice on where best to go. So I went down to Sheffield to train as a professional hypnotherapist. I went down to Stratford-upon-Avon to train to be an EMDR practitioner, and then set up my business, which is SCT Therapy.
Brilliant.
So it was kind of moving from working and kind of being institutionalised, really, as a civil servant, feeling very safe in employment, to then kind of going out in the big bad world. It was a big, big change.
Well done to you for doing that, for making that change. I mean, a lot of people, I think, would love to make that transition from you know, the 9 to 5, the normal kind of, not everybody, but a lot of people, you know, I always see on social media how people would like to come out of their 9 to 5, et cetera, and, you know, be able to do their own thing, maybe own business or whatever it might be. And yes. Have your own hours, you know.
Yeah. And that's what I needed.
You know, and you can kind of be more flexible around other things, like i.e. family, for example, or if you need some time out and things like that. You know, which is brilliant, really. Talk to us a bit more about the business and what's involved.
So again, going from somebody who really didn't know very much about mental health, I didn't really know much about the brain, the mind, the body. I had a lot of learning to do, but I found because I was living with the, you know, with the trauma, and apart from the fact that it's not, you know, it's quite difficult to live with trauma and attachment, I found it really, really interesting to learn how the mind works, you know, how the body works. And I just kind of realized that was the, you know, that's what I wanted to do. So I was trained by a really exceptional hypnotherapist and, you know, learned an awful lot about the body and mind, and just found that I became more and more interested in the trauma element, you know, kind of understanding how it affects different people, how sometimes it doesn't affect people at all, even, you know, if they've experienced the same type of, experiences. But then, so it's kind of I became more and more interested in the trauma element, which helped me to deal with the situation at home as well. The EMDR therapy, the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, that was particularly interesting because I was then able to learn how it helped me. You know, as a recipient of EMDR, you do what you kind of need to do without realizing how it's helping you. But then to actually understand how it all works, that was really, really helpful for me. So it's kind of from that point of view, I started to work with some friends, and then that quickly expanded, really. But then I started to work employed again. I kind of made the decision to get an employed job, which was right at the time. So I did that for about a year and a half, and I still did my private practice as an aside, but then realised in March last year that I wanted to do it all together, you know, so I kind of took that leap of faith and became self-employed and properly focused on the business and now working with clients, and it's just phenomenal. It's just the best thing I've ever done.
It's brilliant. So so my understanding is, so you was in full-time work, civil servant for a number of years. Then you went to do your own business, and then you went back to part-time work. Is that right?
And running
the business at the same time. And what led to that? What resulted in that?
Mainly because it was an adoption therapy service, and obviously adoption is very close to my heart. The people that were running it, I knew them really well. And I felt that at the time it was good to do that because financially it was very helpful to have that, you know, that kind of monthly kind of wage coming in as well as setting up my private practice. Because when you're with hypnotherapy, it has to be private practice. There is no funding available. So, you know, whereas with counselling, sometimes there's funding available and people can get free counselling. You know, they can go to certain places or there's grants available. But with hypnotherapy, there's that expectation that people have to pay. So that in itself is quite difficult to build up your practice and to become established, especially when you're inexperienced. You know, I think for me, what I realized was that I had all of this new knowledge, but I didn't have the wisdom. I had to build up that wisdom, you know. So I had all of this like really responsible knowledge on helping people in their most difficult hours. You know, they were coming to me, they were telling me or sharing with me things that they probably never shared with anybody before. So it's a huge responsibility. And I think I did have, you know, I had all of the tools, I had the kit, I had, you know, I didn't just do hypnotherapy, I did the EMDR, but I also did integral eye movement therapy, which really gave me a good holistic view of people's needs. And then with the coaching and a little bit of the counselling, mental health first aid, and then I did some menopause wellbeing as well, which was, you know, which was really good. And all of the time I was building up all of this knowledge, but you have to put it into practice.
Yeah.
You know, so that when you're working with somebody, with counselling, a lot of that is allowing people to talk and allowing them to kind of, you know, work out their own solutions. With the work that I do, it's working with the subconscious mind, where everything wild and wonderful is held there. You know, all your memories, all of your imprints, all of your learning, everything is held in your subconscious mind. But similarly, when things go wrong, that's also where it's held. And sometimes with counselling, that doesn't come out that way. So it's really important to be well equipped to be able to help somebody. If something comes up, to be able to say, well, there's something here, let's, you know, let's explore this a little bit more. So I think in the early days, it was great and I loved it, but now I absolutely thrive on what I do, because I'm, you know, I'm not saying I've got all of the wisdom, because we're always learning, but having that wisdom to be able to recognise when somebody says something or moves in a certain way, if they're uncomfortable, and it's picking up on that and kind of exploring that a little bit more and helping them to bring out things that, you know, they didn't realise was causing them problems, and, you know, often for many, many years.
Gosh, we are just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sandra, let's talk a bit more in detail about what you do. Now, there's hypnotherapy. How can hypnotherapy help people?
Okay, so with hypnotherapy, and again, it's always a strange one when you start to talk about hypnotherapy with people, because people think about you know what's on the TV.
Yeah, that's what I think about.
Yeah, and it's nothing like that at all. The hypno side of it, the hypnosis side of it, is about helping people to relax into their altered state of mind, so their relaxed mind, their subconscious mind. And that's really, if we think about ourselves as, a computer, we've got kind of the front part where things start to go in, and then the database at the back where everything's held and everything makes sense. But sometimes the conscious mind and the subconscious mind are quite separate. So the way I describe it to people is, we have a conscious, you know, a cognitive mind, a conscious mind, and we can only think of about 7, 8, 9 things at any point in time. Anything more than that, and our subconscious mind kicks in and helps us out. So, for example, if you're driving to work, and you're thinking about too many things, thinking about what's for tea, what you need to do, who you need to speak to, you know, all of those things. And then all of a sudden you kind of arrive at work and you think, oh, crikey, I can't even remember, you know, driving here. Well, that's because your subconscious mind has kicked in, because in your subconscious mind, that's where your memories are of learning how to drive, you know, all of the behaviours, all of the habits that you have in order to be able to drive. So the hypnosis side of things is my job, you know, is to act as facilitator to help that person to relax so that we can tap into the subconscious mind. So, and then once we tap into the subconscious mind, you know, the client is in control all of the time. I can't make anybody do anything that they don't want to do. But if they want to make changes, for example, then that's where the changes are made.
Brilliant.
You know, so the hypnosis side is to help the client to get into a relaxed state of mind. And the therapy side is about making the changes that that person wants to make in order to improve their life or recover from something that's been difficult. So, for example, I've just worked with a client who had motion sickness, and it had motion sickness from being quite a young girl. But when she was driving herself, when she was in control behind the wheel, she was absolutely fine. But when she was in a car with somebody else, she would have motion sickness. And what we've realised together, you know, by exploring with hypnotherapy and with EMDR as well, is that actually at a very young age, something happened, and it's nothing sinister or anything. It was something happened that was associated with being in the car. Okay. And it was quite upsetting for this, you know, for this person. And because of that, she actually told her mind that she was going to be getting into a car and she wasn't going to be driving, and she was going to be sick. She was going to suffer from motion sickness. So without realizing, we actually do that to ourselves, and our bodies react. You know, it's a bit like the body eavesdrops on the mind.
Mm.
And if the mind is not in a good place, then the body reacts accordingly.
So if you're in a negative frame of mind, you pre-program your mind like, absolutely, oh, today's going to be a bad day. And the whole day, you've just programmed your mind so that it's a lot of negativity, yeah, and you're not going to change it. And this is where that whole being positive, thinking positive, no matter what the situation, that's where that kind of comes in. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's about, you know, in society teaches us to be kind to everybody else and to look after everybody else and to show compassion to everybody else. But we're not, you know, along the way, we forget to, or, you know, a lot of people forget to look after themselves and forget that actually they are the most important people in their lives. And if we don't, you know, if we don't act that way, then we can give and give and give, and then you'll have burnout. And then give and give and give, and then burnout. You know, so part of the work that I do is to help people to remember that and to have those kind of coping strategies so that, you know, kind of that's how we can recover from things that are, and remember how to have that positive frame of mind. Because if we don't, then we can create our own circumstances.
So what do you think is the best way to start the day? How would you advise someone? Just talking generally, not anyone with any challenges or problems, just how should we all start the day, really, do you think?
Really importantly, to remember to breathe, okay? There is an element where we do that naturally. We know that. But we tend to get into really bad habits on how we breathe, and breathing and noticing our breathing is really, really helpful. So I tend to do, you know, in the morning when I get up, I do a little bit of balloon breathing just to make sure that I'm not carrying anything from the day before and I've just got a clean slate and I can, you know, kind of get on with the day. And that feels really good. So breathing's really important. And the other thing that's really important is if something is bothering us, rather than trying to distract ourselves from it, it's about noticing it, noticing what it is that's bothering us and just working through it. And the way that I do it in my practice is with bilateral stimulation, which is quite literally left, right, you know, just tapping left, right on your thighs, or kind of butterfly hugs, you know, kind of just tapping. And that provides a message to our body, you know, our central nervous system, our gut brain, our heart brain, our brain just says, you know, it's okay, everything's all right, we've got this. Because sometimes what can happen is we can get into the habit of naturally being in that negative threat state of mind, fight, flight, freeze state of mind, because life is so fast paced these days. And there's an awful lot of stress and anxiety goes on, and people think that they have to live with anxiety, and we don't. We don't have to.
100%. Yeah, you're right. Things are, you know, things do move really quickly. And I think, like with social media, for example, I mean, which can, you know, if people are in business, for example, it, you know, you've got to keep an eye out on everything. You've got to be constantly on it, as well as your own day-to-day work. And then you might have a family. Generally speaking, things are so fast-paced, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they are. And I do think as well that, you know, kind of we are born as human beings to be quite selfish, you know, it's all about us because we're dependent on our caregivers. But then very quickly we are, you know, made to forget that. And, you know, we have to be kind to people. And it's really important to get that balance back of self-care. And you know, it's helpful to have a little bit of self-awareness as well, because otherwise a lot of people that I know through networking and things like that, they will perform at really high levels and then they'll burn out, you know. That's, and then they'll come straight back and then they'll perform at really high levels and burn out. And it's quite important, I feel, in my humble opinion, to find that balance where, you know, if you had a well-being continuum where you have your empty zone where it's not a good place to be, and then you have your really productive place where it's, you know, everything feels really good, it's about finding that balance and being mostly in that balance, recognizing when you're starting to go into the empty zone, you know, stay in the warm zone, for want of a better way of putting it, and then every now and then have that energy to be able to do the really good stuff. But remember that we can't keep at that pace. Not, you know, some people can maybe, but usually it's kind of, you know, you're up and you're down.
100%, yeah. Yeah. I've seen it before where people are at a really high level, but then you slow down. And even I've experienced that where I'm working at a fast-paced level, and then after a little while, you know, maybe it might be a few months, you're like, oh, I need to slow down.
Yeah.
Because I'm feeling myself worn out. And I think we all do it to ourselves, don't we? We're kind of all a bit guilty of that.
Yeah. And I think if you can recognise it when you're starting to come down again, that's good, because that's the point when you start to think, right, okay, I need to take a little bit of time out or whatever. But a lot of people, they just plummet quite quickly.
100%.
And that's when, you know, that's when it's really difficult. The problem is as well, it becomes quite a cyclical problem, because then they'll feel guilty about plummeting. You know, everybody becomes affected by it. Maybe their family gets affected by it, their children. But actually, these people are really trying hard to keep up at that level that is not sustainable.
100%.
And that's...
Talk to us about eye movement therapy. I've never really come across eye movement therapy. So I'm really interested to hear, and I'm sure listeners are as well, hear a bit more about that.
So again, if I was to describe it, obviously there's a real technical way of describing it, but sometimes people struggle with that. So the way that I would describe it to my clients is, you know, at a night time when you go through the different stages of sleep. So we've got our circadian rhythm, and we have four stages of sleep. Some people say four or five stages of sleep. When we get to REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep, that is where our bodies, you know, do all of the recovery work. They do the processing, healing, re-energizing, all of that type of thing. And that's obviously rapid eye movement. So when you're in that sleep pattern, you might even feel as if you're actually awake and you can feel your eyes fluttering a little bit, but you're not. It's kind of your conscious mind is pretty much asleep, but your subconscious mind is always working. You know, our body's always kind of working. There are times when we go into a real deep sleep, and that's not always a good state to be in because we're not doing any recovery work. We're not doing any processing work. So again, I think this is right in saying that I think it was 1987, a lady called Francine Shapiro created EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And she was a very clever psychologist who was psychiatrist who was working with veterans at the time. And I believe that she had some kind of illness herself. And she was sat one day and seeing the trees moving. So kind of, you know, that whole movement. And it really helped her to calm and process. And what she did was she went off and did a lot of exploration, a lot of work, investigation around the effects of that kind of movement. And that's where it all came from. So the way that I describe it to my clients is when they have a trauma or a pain or something that is causing them bother, anxiety, stress, anything like that, when we notice it, when we really, really focus on that feeling, that emotion, you know, so if somebody has anxiety, they might be fearful of something. So if we really focus on that fear, the level of the fear, the intensity of the fear, and we do either eye movement or bilateral stimulation, which is left-right tapping, then the body finds a natural way to reduce the intensity of that fear and helps the natural process to, you know, to kind of reprocess whatever memory it is or whatever event it is that is associated with that feeling. So, for example, you may have somebody who was in a car crash and they may have been knocked unconscious and not remember anything, but actually the subconscious mind may remember an ambulance arriving and, you know, the sirens going off. So even though that person is unconscious as such, you know, they're not aware consciously, and they're taken off to hospital and they recover, and, you know, if they've got broken bones or whatever, they physically recover, but the trauma may still remain. And it could be that they're walking down the street and they might hear a siren, and it may take them back to that place, you know, all of the feelings, all of the sensations, the fear, the fright, or you know, all of those types of things. It might take them back to that place, but by doing EMDR therapy, it can reduce the intensity of that and actually allow that processing to take place. So in the stage 3-4 of REM sleep, when we do our normal processing work and we process the things that's happened that day, and that all gets put away into the filing cabinet in our brain, when things get stuck, when we have trauma or whatever it is, with EMDR, you can do that manually.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's quite a lot to it as well, isn't it? And I think it's association when people might go back to the scene of an incident, maybe. So maybe something happened somewhere to that person.
Yeah.
And as soon as they see that environment, or, you know, it might trigger back the thoughts and that kind of thing. Is it a bit like absolutely. PTSD? Is it a bit like PTSD, stuff
it
like
is,
that?
It is, yeah.
It is, though.
So EMDR works really well with PTSD. The thing is as well, the interesting part of all of this, which is why I'm so passionate about working with people with trauma, is often the event itself is not what's created the trauma. So, for example, if you work with you know, if you work with rape victims, it may not be the actual rape itself that's caused the trauma. It can be something else. So to give you an example, I worked with a client a long time ago, and this is no, I'm not kind of divulging anything, but their trauma, they'd had a lot of counselling, and the counselling always concentrated on the rape itself, the incident itself. But actually, it ended up where the trauma was stuck when that person was stuck in a police car waiting for the person who'd perpetrated them to be arrested, because it had to kind of show the police where this person lived. And their fear kicked in, this huge, really huge body fear kicked in, because they thought the person was going to be arrested and be put in the same police car as them.
Oh, gosh, right, okay. Uh-huh.
So, and obviously that wasn't ever going to happen, no. But that was where they had stuck trauma. So for about 12 years, they had this real deep trauma that couldn't be processed, couldn't be reprocessed, couldn't be desensitized. So lots of things would trigger them in life, and basically they got to the point where life wasn't really worth living for them. It was so difficult. But then once we were able to explore and establish that was where the fear was, you know, and process it, doing EMDR, that was when they were able to make the recovery.
Right, okay. So it's almost like it's what the person interprets in their mind, which might not happen, or it might not be happening, but because they've kind of had that thought, that's it. Their mind and body are now reacted to that actually happening. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's all down to perception, isn't it? Because, you know, how many times have you sat in a meeting and, you know, you might have been proactive in the meeting, and then you come out and somebody says something to you and you think, was I in that same meeting? You know, it's all down to our perception and how we take on information, and that's all to do with our filters. You know, that's all to do with how we were brought up, what our beliefs are, and all of that. And we're all completely unique. So what I interpret from something and what you would interpret from something could be completely different things, but there's no right or wrong. It's all down to perception.
Yeah, no, of course, absolutely. And you also work with... Actually, before we go on to that, let's just go to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So Sandra, basically you also work in the area of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Let's talk a bit about that. And you've mentioned it a few times, the subconsciousness, and it kind of ties in with the NLP aspect, doesn't it?
Yeah. So with neuro-linguistic programming, so the neuro is obviously the brain, you know, kind of how we transmit information. The linguistic side is the language. And that's verbal, written, all sorts, you know, the communication side of things. And the programming is probably the most interesting, because that is how we are programmed. That's how we learn. So, for example, when we go to school, we learn very differently. You know, everybody kind of takes in information very differently, even down to... For example, you may have in a classroom of children, young people, you may have people who have had a really good breakfast in the morning. So when they go to school, they're fully, you know, they're feeling really good. They might have had a really good morning with their parents. They may know that they're loved. They've got, you know, they're really feeling confident and really feeling good. So when they go to work, the foundations, when they go to school, the foundations are all there, and they're able to learn with a clear head. They're not worrying about things. They're not thinking about things. They're not worrying about if they go out in the playground, whether they've got friends that are going to come up to them. And then you've got other people. You've got the other side of things where people are living, you know, with families that are maybe going through problems, that may be money problems, and maybe splitting up. So all of these things have an effect on how we learn, you know, and what we're programmed with. You may have a parent who has really strong beliefs in something. You may have children who go to church every day and then they go to a school that is not, you know, kind of not religious, non-religious. And it's kind of, they have to adjust and they have to work on different levels with different people. They may have teachers who aren't very understanding of children, or they may have fantastic teachers. So it's about whatever's happening at that point in time, how we learn, you know, and as that kind of builds up, that's how we become programmed, and we have our own filters and we have our different ways of learning. For example, I'm not particularly good at e-learning, so I prefer to write things down. And as soon as I write things down, it goes into my head, you know, whereas other people will see e-learning and they'll be able to pick up things just from the screen. So everybody's completely different. And with neuro-linguistic programming, it's about understanding who we are, what we are, how we learn, how we behave. And if we want to make any changes, then we need to look at that and we can make the changes, you know.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you're working with an individual, they may have the type of behaviour where they may easily get irritated or be intolerant of their colleagues. And it's about establishing, well, where does that come from? Why were you programmed that way? You know, and just having a little look to see what it is that could have led to this intolerance, especially if they want to change. You know, obviously you don't just pick up on things, but if they come in and say, you know what, I feel really intolerant, I feel really edgy or irritated, and I want to make those changes, then that's the NLP side of things. So you can kind of work with a big team of people and help them to all start to work and kind of bounce off each other really well. The way I tend to do it is with NLP, I tend to bring it in. I tend to use it as a tool or a technique when we become stuck with things and help the person to understand, well, maybe, you know, maybe this would be something that you need to look at, and help them to explore that a little bit more and make the changes to our programming.
Brilliant, brilliant. What would you say is the hardest part of your job?
Diary management.
Organisational skills. Because you're busy, isn't it? You're really busy. You were telling me about before the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite strange because I think being a project manager as a civil servant for so many years, I've kind of, they're transitional skills, and it's really good because everything is a project, and that really helps me to keep kind of contained and make sure that I have the energy and the time and the expertise and a plan and all of that with each of my clients. Because I can't, you know, you can't work in this type of business without giving 100% to each of your clients. As you know, 100% is maybe a little bit too high, but without giving as much as you can to help them to move on, because that's what you're being paid to do. So from that point of view, I can, you know, I'm okay. But the actual diary management side of things, I really struggled with, and I could cope in the earlier days, you know, back in when I first started to go fully private, fully self-employed, I could manage it because I only had maybe six clients, seven clients, and I could manage it. But now it's harder, but I'm finding new ways, and that's good. That's sounds really like good. You, I'm kind sounds, of reprogramming my mind.
Think you need a PA by the sound of things. you know?
At some point, yeah.
Talk to us about the greatest success story where you've helped someone.
I think that at 50, bearing in mind I'm coming up to 56 in April, I think that retraining at 50 and doing what I do and, you know, having the success that I have, I've helped a lot of people to recover from a lifetime of difficulties. That success is kind of retraining at that age, and I never really gave up. You know, I had maybe a little bit of difficulty thinking, my God, I've been a civil servant all this time, what the hell do I do now? But then just thinking, well, actually, I'm really interested in this. I'm really passionate about it. And then the learning is just incredible. What I've found now is that I've found the balance between learning the knowledge and making it into wisdom. And that's a good success.
Talk to us about where you've helped someone. Where does someone spring to mind? Obviously, you don't have to mention names or anything like that, but where something that springs to mind where someone came to you with a real problem and you was able to help them move through that?
Well, at the minute, I'm working on a really good case at the moment, and this is without obviously disclosing any confidentiality, but I'm working with a client who had a pain. She has a pain in her neck. It was very substantial, and she's had that pain for a long time. You know, I'm talking years and years and years. And it got to the point where it was becoming really, really difficult. So she went to an osteopath, yeah, probably about a month ago. And the osteopath did lots of different, kind of checked out the muscles, checked out the joints, and they couldn't find anything, basically. And he'd spoken to my client and asked if she was suffering from any stress or any anxiety at the time, and she was. She was, you know, there was considerable things going on. And he'd says to her that he suggested getting some EMDR therapy because he felt that it was some kind of trauma. So I started to work with a client, and sure enough, without going into too much detail, there was a really big trauma came up that she hadn't recalled until it kind of came up, because it's, you know, it was many, many years ago when it happened, and kind of recalled it very vividly and realized that actually the pain in the neck was associated with that memory. So we have been doing some EMDR therapy, really focusing on that pain. And we've reduced it now, probably got about another two sessions left to work on this. But we've reduced it from an intensity of 10, you know, so a really big pain in the neck, quite literally, to a 4. And she's able to manage it now. She's able to, kind of return to work and do the things that she needs to do, whereas before it was quite a miserable existence for her. You know, you can imagine it's not pleasant having that pain all of the time, and that was a body memory. That was, you know, that was a something that had never been dealt with emotionally. So we're dealing with it emotionally as well, but the body had kind of given her that pain to remember that hadn't been dealt with, that hadn't been processed. And that's quite interesting at the moment.
I find that very interesting. I've never heard of that before. So a past trauma caused pain in her neck, basically. Is that what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
That is unbelievable. Quite literally.
Because when that incident happened, it would have probably been associated with that, you know, kind of with that pain. And even though for about 30 years that pain had gone, it did come back again because the pain's actually held in the nervous system. And that's the difficulty. The body's actually held on to it. So when she's triggered in life with difficulties, so stress, anxiety, that's when the pain came back. And now that she's realised, she can assign that pain being quite intense over 30, 40 years, actually, to times of stress in our life and illness as well.
Gosh, and you know, that's brilliant work. I mean, you've helped to get back to work, basically, back to normality and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's that type of thing that people understand physical illness, you know, so if you kind of go over on your ankle and you've got a sore ankle and you can assign it to something physical and it has to heal. But people are a little bit more either skeptical or they find it difficult to come to terms with more mental, more mental elements of trauma and what the body does with that type of thing. Going back to my two boys who have early life trauma, they have recall of some of the difficulties in utero.
That far.
Because their birth mum led quite a difficult life, misused, and they have body trauma. So I think that was kind of what really gripped me was understanding and seeing for myself, really living through that trauma and what the body, how incredible we are, you know, what the body and mind can actually do. And a lot of people can go for years and years, in fact, all of their lives, you know, not realizing that they're holding on to something that could have led them in a different path. And it can stop people from reaching their potential or, you know, kind of turning down opportunities can have a huge impact on their lives.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for today, Sandra. It's been, you know, really helpful. If people need to reach out to you, find out more about your services, where can they find you?
So my website is sctherapy.com or my email address is sandra.sctherapy@gmail.com.
Brilliant. And thank you so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you, Gavin. Thanks.
And thanks to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.